Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Gwyneth Dolan. Today we continue our coverage of the 2016 legislative session as part of the People, Power, and Democracy Project, a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, New Mexico In Depth, and the New Mexico Newsport. We are taking a close look at government accountability, transparency, and ethics. This week, a Washington, D.C.-based business group released a study showing New Mexico's economy is stagnant, largely because of the state's reputation for corruption, what it calls crony capitalism. This hour, we will talk about what that report describes as an unhealthy relationship between special interest groups and government. With us today are Michael Rocca, a political science professor here at UNM and the author of that report. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
And Sherry Robinson, a reporter and columnist with New Mexico News Service. Thank you for coming on this morning, Sherry.
And thank you for inviting me.
In a few minutes, we will also talk with Russell Contreras, a reporter with the Associated Press. First, Michael, most people probably agree that New Mexico's economy doesn't look so good, right? We see study after study and figure after figure showing that seems to be the case, and we all maybe feel it in our pocketbooks, too. But there is wide disagreement about why this is happening. What evidence did you find that supports the idea that big government and this crony capitalism system is what is keeping prosperity in check here?
Yeah, there's a couple things going on. There's, first of all, what we describe as crony capitalism, and that leads eventually to perhaps corruption or perceptions corruption, is just one factor of many that help determine the economic performance of any state or any nation. Of course, you think about here in New Mexico, things like education, infrastructure. You know, there's no doubt that those matter to the economy. We're trying to attach the idea of perceptions of crony capitalism, perceptions of corruption, to economic performance in a way that, frankly, hasn't been done, at least to my knowledge, here in New Mexico, the way that it's done across nations. Economists and political scientists have known for 35 years that corruption and crony capitalism hurts economic growth, and we struggle here in the state with perceptions of corruption and perceptions of crony capitalism. And so what we did is that we applied what we had learned for those 35 years in political science and economics to the state of New Mexico, and we just attached two variables together. You have one variable that potentially could be causing another variable. In this sense, it's corruption leading to less economic growth and stifling economic performance.
All right. I thought we were not talking about math, Michael, but I hear you saying variable.
It is. It's math. You know, that's a really interesting point, because what this report is outlining is not controversial. It is math. It is math, and it's math that we have known for a long time, not just internationally, but also in the U.S. states as well. And we provide statistical evidence in the report that shows that there's a pretty robust relationship between the two variables.
Now, Sherry, Michael said he's taken care, I noticed, to say repeatedly the perception of corruption. And we talk about this on the show all the time when we talk about ethics, because perception is reality. You know, if people believe that you are corrupt, if they believe that you are unethical, if they believe, for us reporters, that you're biased, that's it. They don't need really proof, because the belief is powerful. You've worked as a reporter in Albuquerque and in Gallup. You've been doing a lot of reporting in Santa Fe. You've reported on the legislature for a long time. This report says that it's pretty easy for individual groups, industries, kinds of businesses to get tax credits and laws that benefit only their industry. Does that sound like something you have seen in your reporting?
Oh, absolutely. New Mexico has been poor for so long that all anybody has to do is say jobs and people will throw themselves at you. And so we've been handing out tax credits willy-nilly for years. I'm an old business reporter, actually, and I've written about all of these things many times. And so when I read his report, a lot of it was sounding very familiar. for a long time, I supported the tax credits. I supported the incentives because I thought we needed anything that we could do to help industry grow here. But lately, in the last few years, I've been listening more to the New Mexico Tax Research Institute. And Richard Anklin, who runs the institute, has called our tax system Swiss cheese, which means that we have handed out so many tax credits that at times I wonder who's still paying their taxes.
I am too.
And, you know, I guess I don't have influential friends in Santa Fe, but and even this session, you know, even though we have whittled away our tax base and whittled away and whittled away, there are still a slew of bills this year asking for even more tax breaks, and we can't pay our bills now.
I should mention for our listeners that you write opinion columns and you've written editorials for many years now. You sort of shifted into the opinion realm, and that's why you're hearing Sherry express more opinions than the journalists usually do on our panel. Michael, there's criticism here that we're not properly evaluating all of these tax credits. Now, I had occasion, and this no one listening will have done this, I had occasion recently to look at the tax expenditure report that the governor had put out last year. It's much better than it used to be, and I was surprised to see that there is some evaluation in there now. But what I was also surprised to see was how many of the credits the evaluation said no one's using this thing. Literally no one has applied for this credit. Or, you know, we only gave this credit out three times to three people or stuff like that. What, you know, how would more evaluation help us? How would that change this?
Well, if the idea of crony capitalism, let me back up. The idea of crony capitalism is that it's an economy that is mostly free market, but that's it's one that's dictated by the government handing out benefits to groups based mostly on personal relationships or political connections. If we don't know, and the reason that tax subsidies is such an interesting area is because if we don't know whether these tax subsidies are working in the first place, then we don't have any reason to expect that they are they're being distributed based on merit, because we don't know if it's meritorious or not. So it's very easy to perceive these benefits that are sent to the mostly big businesses as ways, hopefully, that will stimulate the economy, that we hope will do. We're not really sure, but we hope they do. But also it's easy to perceive that they're handed out because of the personal relationship, because of political connections, because of campaign contributions.
So we're not really proving it one way or
the other. No, we're not. And, you know, in the most of the reports that have come out of the governor's office, and you're right, they're getting better, don't actually provide any sort of a really robust, rigorous measure for whether or not they're working. So they provide some sort of a historical analysis about why they're there.
Three sentences.
That's exactly right.
And it just says, this seems to be doing well. Eight people took it, but it would be better if you raised this percentage or lowered this. But there's no...
That's right. What we don't know is, you know, there's a lot of money being sent out in tax dollars, and we don't know how much the state is getting back for those tax dollars.
Russell Contreras, welcome to the show this morning. We're glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking about the way that it seems pretty easy to get a tax credit or a subsidy or some kind of break in this state under the system that Michael's new report calls crony capitalism. And it brought to mind the film industry for me, because that was one that everybody was really trying hard to evaluate. But we kept seeing studies that were wildly different from each other. How hard is it for you, when you're trying to report on these things, to try and tell the readers what a tax, you know, break has done or what it will do?
What they usually do is they say, well, we've done this production on this day, and we've hired this many employees who are from New Mexico. We've given a lot of New Mexico-born actors and chances to be part of our production. So they throw this out there. And usually when you do that, it's a distraction. It's like, oh, well, yeah, because so-and-so is in the film, I think this is a great benefit. But it's hard to quantify how much that has really affected our economy. Yes, we have Better Call Saul. Yes, we have the Avengers. Yes, we have all these great things. But what is the effect on the economy? What's the bottom line? Because usually we'll get starstruck and say, well, I love the fact that we have all these productions here. I'm very glad Star Wars came here to showcase our Navajo land and so forth. But what effect did that have? How much money did they spend on Navajo land? How much did they spend on our cities?
That's hard to quantify. But what's really easy to see is that when film and television tax subsidies are under debate in the Roundhouse, that Roundhouse is full of people who work in the movies. Every single person in New Mexico who's ever worked on a film shows up, and it's really fun. You know, they make it fun. They have posters and costumes, and they bring, you know, faces you recognize. It's a very powerful lobby because it's very present, they're very active, they're very aggressive. So you can sort of see the relationship here.
Yeah, and they lawmakers, of course, get excited because then they'll turn around and say, well, this is a great PR thing for the state. This is something that helps transform our image. We can't quantify that. We can't put a price tag on it. And they loved in the Hobnob with various local celebrities. I think it makes them feel great that they've never had that opportunity before in the past. They've never had Hollywood come out here and ask for anything. So, of course, they're going to be welcoming to this. But again, one of the things I think that we need to keep in mind is, although they're there, what is the cost? Yes, we're promoting the state, but what's the bottom line?
And again, it's possible that it's really good, but it's possible that that's great. Listeners, we want to know what you think. Do special interest groups on the left, on the right, in the arts, in oil and gas, all over the place, do they have too much influence in New Mexico? Has this affected your life or your business? Is this what's keeping New Mexico's economy down, or is the lack of education, the lack of infrastructure? 66 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866, or call toll free 877-899-5866. You can also email your comment to callinshow@kunm.org. Michael.
I wanted to jump in on that last point. There is our report is not about whether we don't judge the merit of the tax subsidy programs. It's fits into this idea that we need greater transparency in the state. And along those lines, that we need to actually know whether these things work or not. Because what if that money that's sent to tax subsidies, through these tax incentive programs, could actually be better spent on infrastructure, on education, things that we know for a fact improve local economies, help boost small businesses and local businesses, right? We don't know what the trade-off was with that.
Sherry, I forgot to mention earlier that you wrote for the New Mexico Business Weekly.
Right.
Before it was Albuquerque Business First, right?
Right.
Now it's different. So as a business writer, you have covered many, many times these proposals to give a tax break to a certain industry and in hopes that it will create jobs. Can you think of times when that has worked, when there has really been a great impact from one of these programs? You know, one that, a way that we know that these can work really well.
There are two programs that are kind of the war horses of economic development. One is the IRB, the Industrial Revenue Bond. Those have worked very well over the years. The other one is JTIP, the Jobs Training something Partnership. I can't remember the whole thing. Anyway,
investment, I think.
And that was one that business and labor both supported. Both of them have been in place for years. We know they work, and they've been used again and again and again very successfully. There is a little bill that I'm afraid is going to get lost this session, especially because there's no money to spend. But Senator Mary Kay Papin is carrying a Jobs Council bill, which I think is one of the most important pieces of legislation up there, and that calls for measurement. It calls for measurement of all of these programs and incentives and tax breaks and so forth. And I haven't read it yet. I'm afraid it has a cost attached to it because somebody's probably going to have to be hired to do this. But it'll go by the wayside because it costs money, and nothing with money attached to it is moving this session.
Well, and, you know, Michael pointed out earlier, if we weren't spending money on these tax credits, we might have more to spend there. And we've done several shows where we talked about the capital outlay process and the $1 billion sitting there unspent on capital outlay because the way that we distribute that money is so disorganized and dysfunctional. So there is money floating around out there. And the real question is, how do we figure out how to put it in the right place at the right time so that we are building the infrastructure that we need, so that we are, helping stimulate the industries that are going to create the jobs for the people to buy the cars to drive over the bridge that we've built. And this is, you know, let me take a moment to say our lawmakers work really hard, and we perceive that they are corrupt. We perceive that they're, you know, terrible in many ways, but they're also regular people like us trying to figure out these really big problems, and they're really hard.
Yeah, and actually, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because I want to make it very clear that in no way do I think, or do our, any of the authors or contributors of this report think that New Mexico as a whole is corrupt. That's not the point of this article. Okay, I'm glad you brought up earlier about the perception of corruption. This could truly be a case, and this is what I believe, of a few bad apples spoiling the bunch, in a sense, is that and that the perception of corruption is something that we need to help fix, because perceptions do matter, particularly when you talk about economic transactions. In order for the economy, for economic transactions to occur, individuals need to trust that an exchange of goods is going to happen, and they need to trust that a third party like a government is going to enforce it.
And transparency, we always say, helps do that by seeing the results of these incentives, by seeing this tracking that Sherry was just talking about on some of these proposals. Then people feel like, oh, they gave this industry this money because it's creating jobs. We're good here. Listeners, we are going to take a quick break. We're talking about a new study showing that flaws in our state government are bad for business. Have you, your family, your business, or your industry been helped or hurt by this kind of crony capitalism? Or is this just a perception that this is happening and you have evidence that it's not? We want to hear what you have to say. So call in now with your questions and comments. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866, or toll free 877-899-5866. You can also post to our Facebook page. Look for KUNM Radio or tweet at KUNM News. Use the hashtag NMGoodGov, GOODGOV, to get in on the conversation with our People, Power, and Democracy Project. We'll be right back.
Edible Arrangements at 4770 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast in Albuquerque offers fresh fruit bouquets and chocolate-dipped fruit for any occasion. EdibleArrangements.com or 505-888-0100. Edible Arrangements is a valued supporter of KUNM.
Support comes from the international Irish dance phenomenon Riverdance, returning to Popejoy Hall February 5th to 7th for its 20th anniversary. A fusion of Irish and international music and dance, Riverdance tickets and info at PopejoyPresents.com.
Support comes from the New Mexico Museum of Art, presenting The First Folio, a rare opportunity to see the book that gave the world Shakespeare. On tour from the Folger Shakespeare Library, February 6th through 28th. Details at nmartmuseum.org.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland, and I'm in the studio today with Michael Rocca, a political science professor here at UNM and the author of a report on how crony capitalism is hurting New Mexico's economy. Associated Press reporter Russell Contreras is with us, and Sherry Robinson of New Mexico News Service. Michael, I want to just recap for folks that your premise in this report is that crony capitalism hurts business, and that's what is keeping New Mexico's economy stagnant. And you mentioned some of the specific ways in the report that this happens. You say that this system of crony capitalism reduces local investment, discourages foreign and interstate investment in our economy, it grows government spending, and it shifts government spending away from the programs we know we need, health, education, infrastructure, toward less efficient, more malleable public projects, bridges to nowhere.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
It distorts the proper functioning of the market economy for the benefit of just a few people.
Right.
It hurts consumer spending. We're going to talk more about that and predatory lending later in the show. It hurts investment returns on the government's spending through what is called pay to play and makes the state an unattractive place to do business. I want to go now to the phones and let's talk to Ricardo in Albuquerque. Good morning, Ricardo.
Good morning. Glad to hear you're discussing this topic. I tuned in a little late, so I'm not sure who your guests are. Enjoy listening to your show. Thanks for putting this on. I have some comments. A gentleman was speaking about how much was actually spent on Navajo land. I don't have that answer, but he's looking for quantification. That those numbers are out there. New Mexico has a film office in Santa Fe, and it's got a small staff. They really need more funding, but they do quantify year by year the revenues that come into the state. Not only the revenues that come into the state that do not qualify, such as, you know, paying for talent or crews from other states, but also the jobs, the crew, the money that crews make here locally. It quantifies how much revenue is coming into the state from out of state, basically. And if you think of a pie chart, somebody's bringing a pie of $100 million from out of state, and they come to New Mexico, and that $1 million, maybe of that $1 million, half of it qualifies. So half of $1 million is money that's going to be rebated. Now that when that money gets 25% of that rebatable money goes back to the producers, that's the incentive that brings the business here. These are dollars that would not be here otherwise that go into our economy.
Ricardo, thank you for bringing that up, and that's a really good point. I think the governor and the legislature came to agree a couple of years ago that film was worth investing in, even though they couldn't agree on the exact numbers and their studies were all very different. They agreed there was some positive impact, so that's why we have kept our film industry and television industry subsidies, because folks agree they're working in some way if they can't figure out exactly how. Let's hear from Andres in Española. Good morning and welcome to the show, Andres.
Yes, good morning. I tried to call in last week, but the lines are so tied up on the dependency, sole dependency on fossil fuel and oil, especially here in New Mexico. Anyway, it kind of ties into where the topic is this week. And again, the need to diversify from dependency on solely fossil oil, and because right now our biggest industry right now is tourism and prisons, and you know, we need to start to diversify, and I think it's come to a point where you know, with the budget being what it is this year, and you guys are even doing these programs because you know you're trying to get some input from the community, and I know there's a lot of listeners out there that believe in the same thing, you know, is because equality of education should be number one, and job creation. And I think the need to diversify, not just in filming, but in other avenues that are out there for our youth, and help this state get out of, you know, the situation that we're in.
Andres, thank you so much for calling in this morning. Michael, he brings up a really good point here about diversifying our economy. Does the system you're talking about, the problems you're talking about with making, you know, with the way things work in New Mexico, and it's so easy for individual groups and industries to get the tax breaks and you know, lubrication that they need in Santa Fe, does that make it hard to diversify our economy?
Actually, you know, I was going to say that diversification is a critical piece of the story. And one of the reasons is that New Mexico is at the top of the list when it comes to our reliance, our economic reliance on public dollars, on both state and federal dollars. We're more reliant on federal dollars than any state in the nation. We might be in the top two or three, actually. The point is that that's a context that encourages crony capitalism. And diversification would help break apart that context a little bit, actually maybe a lot, to be honest with you. But the point is that the more money and the more access that the government, either the state or federal government, have in the economy in the state of New Mexico, the more prone we're going to be to trading of favors, right, between politicians
because
and interest groups.
Because government is the gorilla in the room.
That's
everything
right.
has to
That's
go
exactly
through the
right.
gorilla.
So you think about all of the, you know, the public dollars is generated through one of our largest employers, our education system. You think about the labs. You think about, you know, these the military bases, right? These are all this is all tax dollars. Yeah.
Yeah, they're paying my salary right now.
That's mine too.
I'm kidding. I'm on a grant-funded project, and we'll be thanking them at the next break. Sherry?
Well, we're hearing a lot about diversification, especially as oil and gas prices tail off. The state's economy is diversified. It's just that we don't have big enough sectors, big enough and strong enough sectors to offset what else is going on. I mean, tourism is very strong. In the Rio Grande corridor, we have a healthy high-tech sector, which I think we could be looking at them and trying to figure out what we could do to help them grow. We have agriculture, which has been with us forever. And when you leave the Rio Grande corridor, that's the economy, is agriculture. And what could, you know, what might we do for them? They're here, and they've been holding forth forever. The other thing is we have to have the culture to want diversity. I think we've gotten so comfortable with government and oil and gas and maybe a little bit of mining, but we have to be supportive and willing to have these other sectors amongst us, and I'm not sure we're there.
Russell, does our desire to diversify, which we've been talking about for so long, does that contribute to this problem where some new industry comes to town and they say, hey, we want to grow algae or tilapia or whatever?
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of the what got us so excited about the film industry. And we do, the Santa Fe office does quantify those numbers. What I think a lot of residents will say, well, okay, well, we've got these revenues. How did that affect? But what was the result? What were we able to build because we got these revenues? And so when the film industry came here, we got all excited. This is something new. This is something we can attach to. We can see this, the stars here walking around our state, so we can get excited. But the other thing is, okay, we have some infrastructure problems. We were talking about infrastructure. But our lack of water is something that is over us, too, as well. When a business wants to come here, we want to know, what is the access to water? I mean, it's something that it's like our broccoli that we talk about in our news consumption is water. But if a town or a particular county has weak water infrastructure and there is no pressure by the elected officials to tell the residents, you're going to need to pay more so that we can get matching funds through capital so we can update our water structure. Therefore, we can track business X and Y. That is something that looms over us. So it's part of a problem of a diversification, but we have our limits unless we step forth and have more of this investment.
So we have to do it very carefully, and we have to have the information we need in order to make very precise decisions about what kind of investments we're going to make. Let's go to the phones, and let's hear from Tim in Los Lunas. Good morning, and welcome to the show, Tim.
Good morning. Great show. Thank you, Professor, for bringing the subject up. There's several layers, yeah, in my opinion. One is we have to get rid of some of these little government entities, like council governments, that they have a little input. They really don't know what they're doing. And then we're funding many, many of these little government entities that create nothing. The other item is we have to quit being all-stars and going after Tesla or somebody like that, and be realistic about who we can really get here. And then the businesses that are already here, like at the employment office, create a apprenticeship program where the state will help pay for someone's training on onesie-twosie basis. Now, instead of these grandiose programs that never work, there's all kinds of businesses that could use a couple of apprentices, a little bit of help, but they can't quite afford it on their own. And then you get these people into the workforce, and then pretty soon they're paying tax, and they have some skills. But we've got to get away from this grandioseness and become realistic. And we need some qualifications for our elected officials because, for the most part, they're sorely lacking in vision and knowledge.
Thank you.
And I should cover it.
Thank you for your call, Tim. I want to say that I spend a lot of time talking to our state lawmakers, and I met another one yesterday who I'd never interviewed before, and I have to say I'm really impressed by how smart some of these people are, how diverse their experiences are. You know, they are farmers, they are ranchers, they are, many of them, lawyers, they are teachers, they are, you know, they come from really diverse backgrounds. And when they may not be worth much individually, as our caller says, but I think when you put them together, they do a pretty good job of representing who we are and sharing our perspectives. I have to say, I do think that's true.
That's one huge advantage, I suppose, of a citizen legislature, right? These are just regular people who come on the job for a couple months at a time and then go back to their regular lives, right? And so in a democratic sense, that would be, it makes a lot of sense, is that it's just, you'd expect the best representation to come from. Unfortunately, one disadvantage of that, as we write about in the report, is that it's another piece of this pie. It's another contextual variable that contributes to crony capitalism, because the citizen legislators just don't have the level of expertise, the level of experience that in order to combat this system, in order to combat the interest group politics, the bureaucratic politics that may not exist
now,
as much in other states.
Now, are you saying we should get a higher caliber of candidate, or mm-hmm. we should what then?
No. It's not. No, I'm not.
I know. I'm leading you, Mike.
Yeah, no, you are. Yeah. No, the point is that this is, you know, we're one of 15 or 16 states that has a citizen legislature, and my point is that there are advantages to that, and there are disadvantages to that. One of the disadvantages is that if you don't have a professional legislature, it makes the legislature, the institution itself, more susceptible to interest group politics and more susceptible to bureaucratic politics, because the bureaucrats and the interest groups are there year round, right? They're the professionals in this. And then you have the citizens come in and out of the system, and you know, they're getting caught up at the very last minute. They're trying to figure out what's happened over the last 6 or 7 months, and the system becomes more susceptible to interest group politics than it would otherwise. I actually want to respond one more thing that Tim said, is that one of the reasons that we started this paper is because of the response that we were getting in the polls that were suggesting that the small business and the local businesses, or big local businesses in New Mexico, realized that this was happening, right? That this was sort of a grassroots. That's what the Committee for Economic Development does in Washington D.C. is that they represent businesses like this to say, you know, we're frustrated by the system. And so Tim's point about, you know, we go after the big guys and try to bring their money in, and sometimes we lose the attention of we place our attention on the big guys without so much on the local small businesses that actually grow the local economies. And that's sort of what this project speaks to.
You know, Sherry,
I agree on the legislators. If you listen to them in committee, they are us up there. And it's that part of it is fascinating. I wanted to say a word about the councils of governments. I've had a little bit of experience with them, and one of the things that happens in the rural areas is that you have a little tiny town or a little impoverished county, and they are doing all that they can do to pay the sheriff and fill potholes, but they don't have a lot of resident experience. And so what the Council of Governments does is it provides a little depth of experience, and also because they're regional, it allows the counties to work together more and to pool what they have, you know. And then within Albuquerque, all of the transportation planning has come out of the Council of Governments. So, you know, maybe you have a few people who would be better suited doing something else, but for the most part, I think they do good work.
Let's go to the phones now and take a call from Guillermo in Albuquerque. Welcome to the show, Guillermo.
Thank you. The last man who spoke was on target. The question I have is, to what degree can the investigators look at the bureaucrats who are instilled in the system and find the ones that maybe are not behaving so well and get them out?
Thank you, Guillermo. Russ, you know, this is this. That's your job.
Yeah, it is. And I think one of the things we need to reform here is our campaign finance laws. And the reason that is there's a lack of transparency. The attorney general has said that this is something we need to do. We have these million-dollar accounts being run like lemonade stands, is using his words. And I think that can be a temptation for a citizen legislature, because you have all this money, you pressure to raise this money so that you can keep running for office, and therefore you're going to have to engage with all these lobbyists who are the professionals. And with and a lack of transparency and a lack of all these mechanisms that we need, we don't know where this money is coming from and where this money is going. And then our legislators have these discretionary funds which they can use at will and dole out money for various grants. Well, we don't know where that money is going. So it's a combination of all these things that needs to be reformed. And when we try to reform it, there's always they push back and they say, well, we don't want a witch hunt. We don't want us to come after us. Well, you know, if you're going to be part of the system, you have to invest in this transparency. That is something that's non-negotiable.
I've been covering the effort to institute an independent ethics commission every single session since I've been in Santa Fe. That's been since 2009, I think. And this argument is exactly the same every single year. But, you know, I was watching the committee that heard Representative Jim Dine's Ethics Commission bill this week. And this is the one that seems to be moving a little bit more quickly than they have in the past and than any of the others are this session. And one of the things that he said was, listen, you know, this having people look at campaign finance and find that things are okay clears you. Having people look at, you know, having a question about something that you've done, there is a really positive effect in raising awareness of what the right thing is to do and in having your name cleared rather than just being smeared on Twitter all day and your only response is your personal Twitter account.
Yeah, I equate it to if my wife wants to look at my iPhone to see who's calling me, if there's any, you know, do you have your ex calling you? Well, no, here, look at my iPhone. I mean, look through my old text messages.
Trust but verify.
Trust, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, you have nothing to, all you're going to see is me talking mess with my friends about NFL teams, you know, and probably text messages from various spokespersons, from the governor's office, from various the Democratic lawmakers going back and forth about bills. You're going to be very bored. So you can see it. And I think that's what you should be doing. It's like, hey, give your phone. Let us see what you got. If there's nothing, you have nothing to hide. You have nothing to worry about.
And what I think is interesting and different this year is that there are more proposals than I've seen in the past. And I don't remember seeing this in the past. Efforts to allow the Secretary of State to actually look at the bank accounts, the campaign bank accounts, to verify. And I think this is clearly tied to former Secretary of State Diana Duran, to verify that the entries in the system match not only the lobbyist's system in what they gave, but that the bank account shows that the money is really there. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about one specific example of this system, payday lending, and we'll talk about some of the solutions in your report that are outlined there. Folks, we want to know what you think. What do you think we need to do to clean up politics in a way that helps boost our economy for everyone? Call in now with your questions and comments. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll-free 877-5866. Wait a minute. Toll-free 877-899-5866. You can also post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, tweet at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
I named my last car Pearl. We sometimes become very attached to our cars, so when it comes time to let go, we're really honored when you donate your car or truck to KUNM. If you're about to get a new ride, consider donating your old one for a tax deduction and a KUNM membership. It's kind of like keeping your Pearl in your life in the form of great radio. To see if your vehicle qualifies, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
On the next Making Contact.
I came here for the safety, but at least here you have a place to put your belongings. You can go out and get work. You can do all kinds of stuff without being burdened with the stigma of homeless.
On this edition, we visit tent cities across the country to find out why living in a tent beats life in the streets or many shelters, and why despite the benefits, it's far from a real solution to homelessness.
Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan, and I'm here with Michael Rocca, a political science professor at UNM. He's the author of a report on how crony capitalism is hurting New Mexico's economy. We have Associated Press reporter Russell Contreras and Sherry Robinson of the New Mexico News Service. This is the third in a series of call-in shows that we are doing this year as part of the People, Power, and Democracy Project. That's a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, New Mexico In Depth, and the New Mexico Newsport. We are diving deep into issues of good government, transparency, and ethics during this year's legislative session. Michael, I want to talk about payday lending as an example of the system that you are talking about. You know, we've done several shows on this. We've mentioned it several times. Last year, we did a lot of reporting on the effort to cap rates on those loans. We reported this year about the apparent death of that effort in the session already. How does this issue show your point?
It's one of the things that we discuss in the paper is that crony capitalism isn't a binary thing. It's not either there is or there isn't, but it's a matter of degree. So when we talked about tax subsidies and tax incentive programs, we talk about that as probably just one example of crony capitalism where an argument could be made that there are benefits. We don't know. Of course, that's sort of the point of is that we don't know what the benefits are, but at least it's a reasonable argument. Let's provide these tax subsidies in order to attract businesses, in order to grow the economy. There is some logic to that. The second and slightly more, not slightly, probably a great deal more nefarious example would be, in our opinion, predatory lending. It's clearly there to benefit the very few over the many who are really struggling over the program.
And to be clear, there's 600 or 800 of these companies, stores in New Mexico.
That's right.
But it's actually a relatively small number of companies, almost every single one of them based out of state.
That's exactly
very
right.
Very few of them are based in New Mexico.
That's right. And we provide a very attractive population and demographic for these companies to come in and take advantage of individuals who and families who need money quick, maybe because to pay for some medical bills, and then are charged these outrageous interest rates in return. So it is benefiting a few out of state corporations, essentially, to the great expense of the New Mexican population.
So, okay, you've made a great argument. We've heard this argument before, but things don't change. Sherry, why does, I'm persuaded. Why doesn't this change?
Well, I covered a hearing last year at the last legislative session, and in this room, it was like a who's who of bigwig former officials who are now lobbying for these payday lenders. The amount of money flowing into campaign purses from this industry is appalling. It's appalling. Let me give you another number. The largest number of payday lenders, or storefront lenders, as they're also called, per person is in Gallup. The second largest is in Grants. The third largest is in Farmington. And so it's obvious to lots of us that they're targeting Native Americans. It's shameful. They are ruining lives. And yet we go year after year after year with nothing being done. Supposedly there was a compromise bill that was to be introduced this year. I haven't seen it.
There was a bill that was introduced. It wasn't much different from last year. And the advocates for the for capping those rates say, well, why should we compromise with the industry? There's no room for compromise here. And the industry, they know they're vulnerable, so they want to stay where they are. Let's hear from the callers now. Bill in Los Lunas, good morning and welcome to the show. Bill.
Yes, good morning. That was my opinion. These dollar stores, general dollar stores, payday loans, they all suck money out of the state, and the profits go to out of state. Not only that, the general dollar stores are springing out all throughout the state, and they only employ one or two employees per store, but they destroy rural roads
you, Bill. And, you know, I have noticed the proliferation of Dollar General and what's the other one? There's another one of these. Yeah, right?
Yeah,
Dollar General and paid, what is it? Family Dollar. That's the other one. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, they're sprouting up all over these small communities. And I think what Bill is saying is, I'm not sure if they're getting tax breaks or investment in some way or special treatment from our politicians. But this is an example of, you know, something that benefits probably many out-of-state folks. Let's hear from Nick in Santa Fe. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Hi, thanks for having me. I wanted to bring up a success story of these tax breaks. You know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but one of the things that seems to have worked is tax breaks towards small businesses. And I'm thinking of the microbrewing industry in particular in the state has really flourished over the past few decades due to federal and local tax breaks. And it makes me wonder, you know, why if there's this large pool of tax funds to be giving tax breaks to companies, why it's going to large companies, you know, large multinational corporations, when it could be going to, you know, local small businesses, you know, many of which could potentially, like the wine business, you know, be helping adding value to local agriculture.
That's a great point. And it's a great question. I think it's a legitimate question. Is it, I think the argument would be if it is that providing benefits to these large companies would in some way create more jobs, would create a greater impact on the economic future, either short-term or long-term, of the state of New Mexico. But I think your point's a good one, is that why not turn it around and turn it into the and spend it on local and small businesses in ways that we are, that seems to be working. But again, I agree with you, is that the microbrewing industry seems to be doing well, perhaps based on this. The point that we're making is that we just don't know. I mean, we don't really have the hard numbers to determine which ones are working and which ones aren't at this point.
I think the microbrewing industry is improving my life. I think that's for sure. That's a yes. I'm going to give testimony right now. It's improved my life greatly. But maybe we do need some numbers. Yeah. I hear you. Michael, your study recommends that we force politicians and lobbyists to give the public more information about how much money is coming into the political system and where it's going. How is, you know, let's talk about some of the bullet points in your list here. One of them is you want that donors, people who are giving money to candidates, have to identify who they work for, their employer. Why?
Well, let's back up a little bit. Is that in order for the citizenry, for a public to hold the government accountable, we need as much information as we can. Government can't make we need to know what factors contribute to the decisions that our political officials are making. And I know, as a political scientist, just like most of your listeners know, that money matters a lot to the decisions that politicians make. They need money in order to win re-election, and there's a lot of interests out there that are willing to give it to them in return for some access.
So knowing who people work for could help us track the influence of industry.
That's exactly right. And, you know, by the way, this is nothing new. A bunch of other states do it, and the federal government requires it. The federal government, the FEC, requires contributors to list their employer, and in that way we can trace it back to these massive organizations.
And, you know, when you're looking at campaign finance reports, it's always, you know, gold when you see these maximum contribution amounts and they're under individual names, but the employer is there and it's like Chevron, Chevron, Chevron,
exactly.
Chevron. That's really helpful.
That's right.
You also want to require lobbyists to disclose the exact bills and issues that they are working for and against. And I know there's a proposal to do that up there in Santa Fe this session. You want to expand the Campaign Reporting Act to require public disclosure of as much information about political action committees as possible. We've talked about that on this show before. And you also want a user-friendly website that provides full and open access to this information. There's also a proposal that's moving through the legislature now that would do most of that.
Yeah, and actually, I have to give credit to the Secretary of State's office for the, I mean, it's actually, it's turned out to be a pretty good website. I think there's a lot more that can be done as far as making it more user-friendly, something that regular citizens can jump on and mess with numbers themselves, or political scientists or media or interest groups can do it, you know. And it's actually, we did this comparative analysis of states in the region, and we're better off than a lot of other states. I think our model could be something like what Open Secrets or
Follow the Money.
Yeah, Follow the Money, exactly. Those interest groups run, those data sets are just fantastic. And I think,
and they give you pie charts that exactly. show the influence of oil and gas versus, you know, the pro-choice
lobby. That's right.
Lobby,
that's what we
or
should
the,
shoot for.
Whoever.
Yeah.
Let's take this last call here from Joel in Albuquerque. Joel, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to call to say that I really don't believe that there is any sort of distinction between crony capitalism and capitalism. You know, the right. economic model of capitalism is expand or die, it's competition. And so to say that you can prevent these companies from expanding into monopoly capitalism is the exact opposite of the very laws of capitalism itself. And so, keeping that in mind, thinking that we can just simply reform it is very naive, I believe. You know, when you have access to all of this capital, you instantly have access to politicians and thus the ability to change laws in your favor and thus, you know, doing away with the reforms that put you in check to begin with.
Thank you for that point. I want to get one more call in before we go. Elizabeth in Albuquerque. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I just had a comment about what you guys were discussing earlier, getting more money into our economy and diversification. And I think we should do what other states have done, and I think we should legalize marijuana. Colorado got so much money for their school systems that they had to try and figure a way to give it back because they had too much. I mean, what an amazing problem for our state where education is so poorly funded. Why not?
Elizabeth, thank you for that. Michael, I want you to send back to your people in Washington that we solved your problem here on the show today.
That sounds great.
And it is microbreweries and weed. So there you go. We're done here. Kidding, obviously. Super, super kidding. Sherry, Russ, we've been talking about a lot of the things that are the solutions outlined in Michael's report here are things that you've been reporting on for a super long time. Do you feel there's more momentum in this legislative session, even though it's a short one? Is there more pressure because of these recent scandals?
I think there's more pressure. I noticed the Ethics Commission has moved very quickly. And not only that, but the Republicans are on board.
Well, they've always supported that. Let me give them that credit
okay.
right now.
Okay. Yeah. And we're not hearing the excuses that we did before, which was, well, it's that guy. It's not me. I'm not corrupt.
Russ?
Yes, more pressure, but they're going to say they ran out of time.
Well, they're going to say they ran out of time on a lot of things for sure. We'll see what's on that list. I want to thank you all so much. Michael Rocca, thank you for bringing this report to us and allowing us to talk about it and share your solutions.
Thank you.
Sherry Robinson, thanks for talking to us about the business angle of how crony capitalism affects the business community.
Thank you.
Russ, thanks for being with us today.
Absolutely. Let's go to the brewery.
Are you, the listeners, concerned about the influence of money in politics in New Mexico? Join the People, Power, and Democracy Project for a community conversation about these issues. Wednesday evening, February 10th, in Santa Fe, limited seating is available. So find out how to RSVP and share your comments and questions online. Go to KUNM.org. Next week on this show, Megan Kamrick is going to host a conversation about a plan to overhaul Albuquerque's public transportation system. It's called Albuquerque Rapid Transit, and it's controversial. That's next Thursday morning at 8 on The Call-In Show. If you missed any of this show, go to KUNM.org and you can hear the audio. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer, Kaveh Movahed, screened your call, Anna Landy, assisted with production. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. Support for the People, Power, and Democracy Project comes from the the Thornburg Foundation, and this is a multimedia collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, New Mexico In-Depth, and the New Mexico Newsport. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland.